Well, it's something that had been sort of growing, as you could see the expansion of the virus around the world, and the fact that it was not diminishing, and in fact that the curve was starting to go dangerously steep, and so as an individual with a certain amount of experience in Olympics, I thought this is getting to be unlikely that we're going to go ahead, and so then I started to follow the discussions and the statements that were being issued a little more closely.
So did you realize it a few days before Tuesday that you have to find a new date?
Well, yeah, in this sense that I thought a new date would have to be found, that we were not clearing up the situation fast enough to make a July 2020 start of the Games possible. But it's more complicated than that, and I knew that other people would be thinking about what needs to be done and how it could be accomplished. But I'm really no longer in the executive board of the IOC, so I was not part of the discussions that were happening there.
You were one of the first to talk about possible transfer of the date, even before it became official. Was that to increase a little bit of pressure, or why have you talked about it?
Well, it wasn't so much to increase pressure, but I was concerned that as things were developing, both the Tokyo Organizing Committee and the IOC were marching together towards a July 24th start, which I thought was increasingly under attack. Now, I agreed that there was no need to take a decision too early, but at some point a decision would have to be taken on the basis of the best advice that would be available, whether to proceed or not on July 24th. And I simply mentioned that.
Do you understand that there's a lot of criticism in Europe and somewhere else that this decision came very too late?
Well, I've heard that, and with respect, I don't agree that it was too late. I think it was necessary to take it once it became clear that it was not possible or very unlikely to be possible for the Games to proceed as originally scheduled. But you know, unless and until you have that information and develop that consensus, it's too soon to take a decision. This was, you know, we still had 4 months before the Games were meant to start.
When you have our perspective here in Europe, it really didn't take long to think about it that the Games can't start in July. And this was a perspective that was clear many days before Tuesday. So why has it been such a long time until the decision?
My sense of it is, and again, I'm not in the inner circle anymore, is that the...
But you know many people in the inner circle.
I have been around for quite a few years now, but my impression was that the Japanese were looking at the situation in Japan, and I think they were seeing encouraging signs that either the rate of increase was diminishing, or in fact that there had been an absolute decrease in the cases, and we're thinking that it might still be possible to go ahead with the Games. I think they were focused perhaps a little too much on Japan as the host, and maybe not taking into account the dramatic spread of the virus throughout the world, and getting them to understand that the problem was not so much Japan anymore as the rest of the world being unable to compete or travel or for the athletes around the world to train under conditions that would allow them to prepare for competition as extensive and as important as the Olympic Games. And once they reached that conclusion as well, then it was pretty clear that the decision would be not only taken, but announced.
What was the decisive point in the end?
I think the decisive point was probably confirmation from the World Health Organization that the virus is nowhere close to being under control at this point, and not likely to be probably even by the end of the year this year. And so that they confirmed the with on the basis of reliable information the feelings or the conclusions that both the IOC and the Japanese had reached, and which were shared by many sport organizations and athlete groups around the world.
Would you agree that one of the decisive points are the athletes, that they played one decisive role?
I think that their role was important, perhaps not decisive, but certainly important. And there was a lot of consultation, as you'll remember, between athlete groups, between the IOC and the international federations, the IOC and the national Olympic committees. And I think, to be fair, the IOC tried to make sure that its decisions were based on the widest possible communications and the most reliable scientific evidence.
But would you agree, or is it too much to say that the athletes have taken back the Olympic Games?
I don't think they ever lost them. I mean, the Olympic Games have always been this fantastic international platform for the best athletes of the world, and the whole concept of the competitions and the gathering together every 4 years in an Olympic village and having these peaceful relationships has been part of the Olympics since their beginning, and they haven't lost that. And I'd say what they are today is much more articulate about their role and their feelings, but it's always been about them.
But if the athletes had not said, "We are not going to compete in Tokyo, even though we have qualified," the pressure would not have been so great, correct?
It might not have been. I'm not familiar with the precise formulation of that concern, but clearly there was a growing concern that they thought it would be dangerous, that in the present circumstances around the world, and particularly in Europe with the lockdowns that we've seen in Italy and Spain and France and to some degree in Germany, the logistics, if nothing else, but also the potential safety and the likelihood of increasing the spread of the virus are certainly things that should be considered. And I think it's very healthy to have the athletes express those concerns and to put those concerns into the mix of the decision-making process itself.
You've said, Mr. Pound, the athletes are articulating their points of view in a different way than before. Can we say that the IOC has not listened carefully to what the athletes have to say for a too long time?
It's not that so much as I mean, when I was an Olympic athlete, and this is a long time ago, your job as an athlete was to do what you were told by your national federation and your national Olympic committee, and just to keep quiet, leave it to the adults to look after all of the travel and the political considerations and all of that. Over time, the concept of sort of athlete rights and athlete participation, including as full members of the International Olympic Committee, has grown, and I think that's been very healthy. It ensures that people my age are not making sport-related decisions without the input of the athletes who are actually on the field. It's important to know what those conditions are and what those concerns are, and to listen to them, which we do. And as I say, we have a very active set of 15 IOC members who are athletes, the same numbers we have for international federations and National Olympic Committee. So it's a very vital and involved component of the overall governing body, namely the IOC.
But is that enough? Without the athletes, the games wouldn't even exist.
Yeah, I suppose you could argue the opposite too. Without the games, the athletes would not have the same platform. And so I don't think that this is one of these issues that needs to be debated. The athletes are now a recognized part of the governance structure of the Olympic movement. They have been since, 1999 or 2000, when the IOC reforms were put in place. And it's, in my view at least, it's been a very successful addition to a balanced consideration of all of the issues that have to be taken into account in something as complicated and complex and interrelated as the Olympic Games.
Would you state that there's another, a different way to recognize from the IOC the perspective, the articulations from the athletes?
I'm not sure what that would be. I'm not certain if you're suggesting that athletes should have a right of veto on any decisions that are taken with respect to the Olympic Games. I would not go that far, no.
I will tell you what Max Hartung says, the German athletes spokesperson. He complained about the values of sport, and he says it was irresponsible to start for him, even if his heart was bleeding, because he had been working toward it for 4 years. Otherwise, the IOC always keeps these values of sports very high. Do you think it hurts to be accused of something like that by an athlete?
Well, I think that's a personal opinion of that particular athlete. And, you know, the athletes, if they really feel that they should not be participating in the Olympic Games under the current conditions, and even if the Games were to proceed, which they're not, you always have the personal freedom to say, well, my personal values are such that I think that my participating in the Games under these conditions might make the spread of the virus even worse and endanger world health. Therefore, I will not participate. That's a right that exists for every athlete and every Games.
Is this, in the end, one of the lessons of these challenging weeks in March, that the word of athletes has to be given more weight in the IOC?
Well, I think the voice of the athletes as one component of the Olympic movement deserve to be considered, and we've tried to make that possible. I think every IOC athlete member would be very willing to acknowledge that their whatever they discuss or recommend is taken very seriously by the IOC as a whole, because the IOC members as a whole understand the more immediate connection that athletes have with the conditions of sport and the conditions of competition, the ability to prepare for the games, and in fact, in some cases, to even benefit financially from them. So they're a very real part of the Olympic movement, and I think have been treated that way.
And you wouldn't say that the athletes need many, many more votes in important decisions like the host cities or something else?
I would not. I would say they're in there on a balance. They have the same overall voting power as the international federations collectively and as the 206 National Olympic Committee. So I think they're well and fairly represented. And frankly, the experience of athletes is perhaps a little more extensive now that athletes are able to compete into their late 20s and 30s, and they have a little broader world experience. But that's quite different from athletes that might be in the sports where you reach Olympic levels at an earlier age where you don't have that much experience. So it's you don't want to unweight the voting power in favor of those that may not have experience with all of the many, many complicated aspects of the Olympic movement.
So, Mr. Pound, it was quite a historic week, the postponement of the Olympic Summer Games in Tokyo. What do you think, what are the lessons of these weeks in March 2020?
Well, I think there are a lot of lessons. One is the importance of making sure that you don't make decisions unless and until you have the full information, reliable information available to you, that you, because it's an interconnected operation, you need to have consultation with and provide information to all of the stakeholders in the games. You have to deal with your I'll call them business partners for lack of a better word, but your sponsors, your television broadcasters, your television broadcast sponsors, so that they know what issues are being considered and are comfortable with the approach and the rhythm that's been adopted by the International Olympic Committee. And I think overall, when we go back and look at all of the elements, we'll probably conclude that we did the right thing at the right time and for the right reasons.
But what to learn from these lessons for the future?
I think probably lesson number one is that this is not likely to be the last pandemic that we face in our world today. And we've seen just how fast and how dramatically this can develop.
So you need a plan B for every games in the future?
You have to be aware that you may need a plan B, and you have to be alert to what the main elements of a plan B might look like, but you don't want to float plan B out there before it's the right time to do so, because you know, one of the potential difficulties there is that the plan B, before it's articulated and while it's still speculative, all of a sudden becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's not helpful to anyone.
You said there were some more lessons to learn. Which are these?
One is to be prepared early if there is an indication of a pandemic, and that's you discover that from organizations like the World Health Organization and the specialized agencies that it deals with, and respond very quickly to that. The prevention of the spread of a virus of this nature is absolutely vital. And, you know, we're not in the days that we were with the Spanish influenza back at the end of the 1900s, or 1918 and 19, where people didn't know as much about medicine, didn't know as much about how diseases could be communicated, did not have the scientific knowledge or experience to develop the necessary vaccines and so on. So all of these things are much more developed now. Communication is much more developed, and you can have instantaneous worldwide communication. All you have to do is try and make sure that what is being communicated is accurate and not pseudoscience.
Must there be some changes in communication in dealing with these situations?
Well, I think you have to understand the importance of communicating, and then you have to make sure that you are communicating the right things at the right time to the right people.
Has IOC understood?
Well, I think they have. I think it's been a very steep learning curve, but I think they got onto it quite quickly. As soon as it was known to be a pandemic, the liaison and the opening the lines of communication with the World Health Organization were put in place immediately, and they've been monitored on a daily basis. And it wasn't really until that curve of the spread started to rise significantly, in the mathematical form of a pandemic, that they really had to sharpen that focus. And then when it became clear that the virus had spread too much to be controlled by July, to act quickly.
What about the president? What about Thomas Bach? There are some calls for his resignation. Hasn't he made serious errors in his judgment?
I don't think there have been any serious errors of judgment made by the IOC or by its president in this. I think the treatment of the issue has been serious and measured and coordinated. It's been well communicated. Frankly, it's hard to imagine what complaint could be made about what he did and what rhythm was adopted for arriving at the eventual decision.
One example, Mr. Bond, one example. Speaking about the boxing qualifiers in London, experts have warned, but now we have several corona cases by the athletes and coaches taking part at these qualifiers in London.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I'm not sure whether they've traced the positive cases to the fact of there being a competition in London, or maybe there had been some transmission prior to London. But again, the pace of needing to make a decision increased quite dramatically by the end of that particular week.
So to make it clear, Thomas Bach is the right person to be president of the IOC.
Well, to the extent that you're focusing on this particular issue, I think it's been very well handled at both a presidential and an executive board level, and on the part of a very, very sophisticated and knowledgeable IOC administration. So everybody worked together on this, and I think that the real focus right now should be that anybody who had any part in causing the decision to postpone to be made should be very happy with that outcome. It preserves the games. It avoids accelerating the spread of the virus, because the athletes are not going to have to worry during this summer period and maybe even into the fall about adding to the problem by being in contact with training partners and others. So I think when as they say over here, when the smoke clears and all of the facts are examined dispassionately, the conclusion will be that it was remarkably well handled, both from the sport perspective, from the administrative perspective, from the perspective of dealing with your partner, your partners in Japan, who've invested time and money in getting to the position of being able to put on Olympic Games, and who are willing to stay in place for an extra year in order to make sure that this generation of Olympic athletes gets its chance to show the world what sport can do.
So excuse me, Mr. Pound, let me ask once again to Thomas Bach. He was asked if he has a single thought on his resignment in a press conference during this week, and his answer was one word, a clear no. Would you be also so clear?
Well, first of all, I don't know who has asked him to resign or whether it was simply an idle question in a press conference, but I think the answer in the circumstances was quite correct. No. I've done nothing in this situation that would call for resignation. And in fact, I think, as I say, when the smoke clears, we will find that the IOC acted as a responsible international body of importance.
And
on
fast
an
enough?
Issue. And certainly fast enough. The events that have been canceled up to now were taking place, you know, basically at the time of cancellation. This was 4 months before. This is plenty of time. We waited, and he waited because he was directing this, until it was inescapable that the curve of the spread was going to make it impossible. Even if Japan was okay, the rest of the world is in complete turmoil, and it would be irresponsible to encourage anyone to go on training for an event that is not going to happen on the originally scheduled basis.
At the end of our sports talk, let's have a look forward. What is the concrete way forward? Not all questions have been resolved. Keyword is perhaps the Olympic Village.
Well, I think the first key is, what date are we going to use for the Olympic Games? Now, there's an awful lot, as you know, to be done in changing and moving something as complicated as the Olympic Games. So my personal view is that we probably should do it at the same time in 2021 as it would have been this year. I think it will probably take that long to get all of the pieces put together on a different schedule. But yes, there are all kinds of matters that have to be addressed. The Olympic Village is certainly one. Are the facilities that were planned for 2020 still going to be available in 2021? Are we going to have the, you know, the transportation infrastructure, the security infrastructure? Is all this going to be possible? And how can it be? How can it be rearranged? How are we going to get the rest of the world to participate in the games? So we're going to need the communication platforms to be put in place, and I mean, there's thousands and thousands of things that, that have to be arranged. So my thought was it would take all of the time available to do that.
You said your personal opinion is to move it to July or August 2021, 1 year. IOC President Thomas Bach has let it be known that it does not have to be summer. Is it possible, Mr. Pound, to take care of the long discussions about heat and climate in Japan by going into spring, for example?
Well, I think Thomas has been smart to leave that open for discussion. And, you know, can all of the necessary arrangements be put in place with international sports federations and broadcasters and sponsors in time for games in the spring? I don't know. Those are discussions that are probably underway as we are speaking today. And my guess is that in sometime in the next month, they'll put a pin in the paper and say, okay, this is when they'll be. Here's what has to be done. Here are the adjustments we need in the 2021 sports schedule and television broadcast schedules, all of those things. We'll have to see what transportation will be like when this pandemic is under control or partially under control. I mean, there are all kinds of complicated things that perhaps people who just watch the Olympics every 4 years or, you know, don't really understand. They just turn on their television sets and, oh, there it is, and it's magnificent. But there's a lot of interrelated and complicated things to be done in order to make that happen and appear so spontaneous.
As you know, as we all know, the IOC likes big symbols and great pictures. The spring, the cherry blossom in Japan, the 10th anniversary of the Fukushima disaster. It couldn't be more symbolic as to go to March.
Well, I think I mean that's a possible symbol to be added to the overall Olympic symbol of, you know, the largest peaceful gathering on the face of the planet. That to what extent that will dictate the fixing of the dates, I think it's too soon to tell. There are too many people and organizations that would have to be consulted, and a determination made as to whether they could actually deliver everything we hope for at that particular time. But by all means, let's explore all of the alternatives.
At the end, Mr. Pound, perhaps easy, perhaps not easy question. What makes you keep your faith in the Olympics, in the IOC, and why do you think the Olympics are still a very important movement in the world?
Well, as I say, it is the largest peaceful gathering on the face of the planet. And I was there briefly in 1960. I had so much fun that when I finished my sport activity, I said to myself, you know, if there's anything I can do to make an experience like this possible for people younger than I am, I'm happy to do it and happy to work to try and make that happen. I really haven't changed that. I think it is at its best. The Olympic movement is fantastic for youth and a fantastic example that if you can make the Olympic Games work, even if it's for only 2 weeks every 4 years, it's a sign, it's a hopeful sign for the world at large that if the Olympics can work, maybe the world can work too. And so you put, as the Olympic Charter says, you end up putting sport at the service of mankind. And I think that's worthwhile.
But one can think in the end, it all seems to be all about money.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, you need money to have an international sports system work. There's a lot of travel and training and expense and so forth. And you need to help your organizers raise the necessary funds to put on the games. But in the end, it's not the money. It's the smiles you see on the face of the athletes who've been there.